self-eliminating jobs and what that means to you and what that means to me. This is episode number 768 of The Next Step, 322023.
Hi, this is Susie with In His Shoes Ministries, welcoming you to The Next Step with Father Vazquez. Since 2008, we have been producing these podcasts on a weekly basis for those who are seeking practical and deeper applications of faith and spirituality in their lives today. Blending the most ancient traditions of Armenian Orthodoxy with the challenges of the 21st century, Father Vazquez brings a distinctive and unique voice to the Christian conversation of peace, harmony, and love. There's no need to check your brain in at the door. Armadoxy is a practical approach to melding spirit and passion in the real world. So turn up the volume and get ready to take the next step.
Self-eliminating jobs. Are you in one of those? Are you eliminating yourself? I hope not. I hope you're with me today. Welcome. Welcome to the next step. It is incredibly cold here in Southern California. We just went through some major, major storms that knocked out power in many areas. And fortunately, some of us were spared. I went out for the most gorgeous bike ride on Sunday. This was following the first set of storms that came out. And I saw just the most gorgeous, gorgeous mountainscape filled with ice caps. Snow caps, just beautiful. In fact, if I can, I'm going to put one up on our on the show notes. If not the show notes, maybe we'll make it the show cover. How about that? Just beautiful. That's in Pasadena, California. And following that, we had a few more storms. Anyway, today it is beautiful. It's still cold. Woke up this morning to freezing temperatures, and that's not usual here in Southern California. Not at all. We have four seasons here in Southern California, and they're all summer. They're all warm. But right in the middle of winter right now, we are experiencing some cold, cold days. I don't know about you, wherever you're at, what's going on over there, especially all of you down under and in South America too. I know our listeners in South America. Do you call them down unders as well? They are down under to us. I would imagine. I found out recently from a group that attends our Bible study. I asked them, "Do you refer to yourself as down under?" And they said, "Yes, they are down under." But I would imagine that if you're in Australia or if you're in South America, you would have an inverted globe look, right? Like, and I've seen maps like this, where Antarctica is at the top of the map. Here in the Northern Hemisphere, we're used to the maps with the Arctic Circle, and then we are North America, and north is upward, and south is southward. So I guess that's where the down under comes from. And I'd be interested to know. South America, are they referred to as down under as well? Anyway, wherever you are in the world, and those of you down under are enjoying, I hope, a nice summer, but wherever you are, I hope you're comfortable for the next few minutes as we talk about self-elimination. What a friendly topic for the next step. No. What I'm talking about is truly friendly topic. I've been thinking about this lately. There are certain professions, for instance, psychologists, psychiatry, right? The whole object, the purpose of psychiatry is to get to a point where you don't need that psychologist anymore. It's basically the object of the psychologist is to eliminate him or herself from the person's life. Self-elimination, that's what I mean. Arguably, you could say the same is true for a doctor. Perhaps a physician that is engaged in operating. Okay, you could say that an operator, a surgeon would want to eliminate him or herself from the person's life. In other words, to do the surgery proper, and then it's done. And so in the case of the psychologist, the psychiatrist, you could refer to them as a physician who comes in and does a surgery on the psyche and the person becomes well. I mean, the object of it, that's what I'm saying, the object of that profession would be to eliminate oneself. Grade teachers, I guess. The object of my purpose, if I'm the eighth grade teacher, would be to ensure that that child does not repeat the eighth grade, to ensure that that child has the knowledge to advance to the ninth grade. So basically eliminating my job from that person, but not necessarily my job, right? You get the idea. That's what I'm talking about. Because I think that the question for me comes up, at what point do we stop with the church? At what point do we stop with our faith? I got an interesting call from a friend who said that there's going to be an article written about Lent. Okay, and the author of the article, the columnist, would like to interview you about Lent. And to me, this was like, what? Yeah, like how many times have we done this? Well, yeah, we've done it 100 times. We've done it at least during the last 40 years of my ministry as a priest. I've talked to congregations so much so that we've codified it and put it inside of a website. And there it is. Yes, 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 yes. But there are new people coming to it, right? It's that point at which you realize that the people out there are younger than you and they just don't know the same things that you know. No, no, no. I'm not talking about this intelligence thing. I'm talking about mere facts. For instance, I think I shared this with you a few months ago when I gave the sermon for Archbishop Vaclav Sepyan of blessed memory. They did the 40th day service at the Pasadena church, and the priest was kind enough to ask me to deliver the homily that day. And as I was speaking, I realized, and it occurred to me when I made references to not only Archbishop Vache, but also to Vazgen I, the Catholicos of blessed memory, that there are people who just don't know who these people are. And just by virtue of where you are in life, of how old you are. And it was unthinkable to me. Growing up, it was unthinkable to me that somebody inside of the Armenian church would not know who the Catholicos of all Armenians, Vazgen I, was because of his prolific life. I mean, against the communists, keeping the Armenian church going. He was one of the longest pontiffs for 39 years. He was the Catholicos of all Armenians. And when he passed, I mean, there wasn't anybody who did not know. But that's been 25 years? 27, 28 years? Almost 30 years, okay? Since his passing. Yeah, and there's people who've been born after that. There are people who were children at the time and don't remember. And it was the same one talking about Archbishop Vache. It's been 20 years since he has since he retired from the primacy of the Western Diocese. Yes, he's been a fixture and a part of the Western Diocese prominently during the 32 years as the primate, but after his retirement, less and less, and certainly there are people who don't know him in his heyday when he was a shaker and mover of this diocese. And so it's not a question of like, I know more than you. I have lived more than you, so I know a few more facts than you do. It's not a question of intelligence, but rather this history lesson. Often when I'm teaching or lecturing to a different crowd that I'm not familiar with, I will challenge and ask, really, for my edification too. I'll ask, what is the defining moment in your life? What happened where you cannot forget it? I know for my parents' generation, it was Pearl Harbor. when Pearl Harbor happened. And I mean, it's etched in my mind only from their reflections and from history books that Franklin Roosevelt talks about a day that will live in infamy, December 7th, when the bombs fell in Pearl Harbor. But I wasn't alive then. So yeah, it's a distant image. It's something that they talked about. What was it in my life? The assassination of John Kennedy. I remember that distinctly. I remember what happened that day. I remember being in 7 years old. What was I? Second, third grade. Mrs. Ferris's room. And I remember her coming into the room with this roll-on television set. And she asked us, boys and girls, bow your heads and pray for the president. He's been shot. Yes, I know, this is not a parochial school. This is in public, L.A., Los Angeles Unified School District. The teacher comes in. Yes, it was allowed. It was okay. She came in and she said, pray. And we all put our heads down. We did pray. It was a defining moment. And to see those pictures and to see the coverage of it. And we saw so much, but that was, to me, a defining moment. I remember Bobby Kennedy's shooting. I remember Martin Luther King's shooting. The string of assassinations here in the United States. I remember the resignation of the president, Nixon. But to me, that Kennedy moment, it's etched in my mind. I asked a group recently, and they said it was the Challenger disaster. Now, by telling me that, they tell me where they are. You could kind of gauge how old that person is, right? What was that, 1982 or 83 or 84? Maybe it was 84, I think. The Challenger. I remember it. I remember we stood still, opened up the TV. We had this small little 12-inch black and white. The first 10 years of our lives, married couple, this way we watched life on a black and white set until my brother got fed up and he bought us a color TV, a 19-inch, yes, big tube TV. But I remember that morning, you know, and watching the Challenger space shuttle go up and explode. And more than that were President Reagan's words. They went up and they touched the face of God. Look how powerful those words are. In the imagery, and they preserve that moment for me. And each of us has these moments, and maybe one of the Lenten exercises that I'm going to ask you to do is think about, what is that moment? What is the moment in your life that defines who you are? To me, the Kennedy moment meant an end to that youth. It was truly a defining moment. Right after that followed the Beatles, the English the British invasion, you know, rock and roll came in. We were different. We had Woodstock, and that led on to John Lennon's assassination. I mean, wild things that happened in our lifetime. But there's a whole generation, several generations, that doesn't know that. And the most recent one was, I remember asking, and the person said, when Michael Jackson passed away. That was interesting, yeah. And so that kind of gives you an idea of where that person was. How old was he? You could add the number of years since the death to, I would say, about a 10. Maybe 8, maybe 7. Because I do it in terms of my age. With Kennedy, that would be about something that would be a defining moment, defining time in your life, right? What is that defining moment? And it's interesting because in all of the cases that I'm just now realizing it as I'm speaking, all of these are very negative, disastrous situations, right? Is there a defining moment that's a positive defining moment? Something good that you will remember, that defines you, defines who you are. In my case with the Kennedys, it defined me who I was because I realized that life was more than this material existence, that you have to do what you have to do. And I think that drives me, that keeps me going. Those of you who've listened, who follow our shows, know what In His Shoes is about. It's walking in the shoes of others. Where does that come from? Well, go back to Kennedy. Ask not what you can do for what the country can do for you. Ask what you can do for the country, right? It's pretty basic. It's pretty basic where you come from. And there's a lot of people who see the disasters that are going around in our lives. And we'll come up with a different worldview. Now, why do I bring this all up? Because at what point do we understand that we need to let go of the reins? I was challenged to provide some Lenten information. That's what prompted all of this. Okay, I could do the Lenten information. I could give the Sunday school lesson, right? It's 40 days. It's 40 days before Easter. It's meatless diet. It's vegan diet. Those are the mechanical things. But what was beautiful about this experience, just preparing this for the interview, I went out and I pulled up my primer, which every year, I forgot since when. I think it was since my St. Peter days in Glendale. We came out with this primer, the Lenten primer. And it basically gives you the story of what Lent is with the dates. And I update that every year. Every year, there's a new update to it. In other words, I change the dates on it, okay? And I will have it on today's show notes. If you'd like to download a copy, check out today's show notes. I'll make sure that we get that out to you too, okay? I'm making a note right now in case I forget. It gave me a chance to really go through what is it that I preach, what is it that I provide. And I realized it's not the Sunday school lesson. What I'm providing through the next step is actually the next step. It was wild the other day. I met with some Armenians. We were talking, and this is right in the middle of Glendale, Pasadena area, and they were talking about April 24th coming out and doing a blood drive. And they said, you know, we hope we can count on you. Of course you can count on me. But it's wild to me because like 25 years ago when I got to Pasadena and we tried the blood drive, it met with every conceivable opposition you could imagine. Like, who are you giving that blood to? What are you doing? What's it? This is April 24th. We've got to mourn the ones that have died. What are you talking about? Giving more blood and everything. But we did it. We persisted. And so now there's a generation that is doing blood drives. God bless them. They found it for themselves. But it's not something that, you know, okay, I did it 25 years ago. Big deal. So you did it. There's a lot of things that I do that probably somebody did 50 years ago. So what I'm asking is, at what point do you understand that you need to relinquish and let go of what you have? In other words, give it to the universe. A couple months ago, my siblings and I went and visited our grandparents' graves. And they are in a section of town in Los Angeles called Inglewood. From where we live, I would say it's a good half an hour, 45-minute drive. Not that far. It's over by LAX. Okay, that's probably more of a more of a landmark than Inglewood is, okay? Although right now there's the SoFi Stadium, yeah. In our times, it used to be the Inglewood Forum, but now there's the SoFi Stadium. So I guess these are the big landmarks of Inglewood. And this cemetery is right across from that stadium. So we went there and we visited our grandparents' grave, which we hadn't done in several years. We found them and we decorated them with flowers. We said our prayers, but it occurred to me that that's about it. I mean, we will remember our grandparents' grave. And I'm sure that our children will know about their great-grandparents. But what are the chances that our children will be visiting the great-grandparents? Perhaps along the way, somebody will say, oh, I'd like to do the genealogy. Where are they? And may look them up. We've provided them with all of the details. We have it written. They could find it. But what are the real chances that they would get together and say, let's go and find their graves. Well, we did. We did to grandparents. I don't know if it goes beyond that. This came up earlier this summer when we found that picture, the one I wrote about the Los Angeles Holy Cross Church. 95 years ago, a group of people, survivors of the genocide in Los Angeles, getting together for a church picnic and dressed. And I made the comment that these people were the ones whose wounds were still open. And yet every one of them was dressed to the hilt, dignified. You'd never know that they came out of a genocide. But this was the dignity that they shared. 95 years ago. That's not a lot of time. Less than a century, right? How many of those people do we recognize? I, for one, who was born and raised in that community, I couldn't recognize anybody. Maybe there was somebody who was, not maybe, I should say there was probably a few people in there that were parents or great-grandparents or grandparents of somebody that I might know. But how do you make that connection? And how important is that? All of this not to get you depressed, but just to talk about our finitude, how finite we are. And in that finite existence, we now start to define who we are. Okay? Pretty heavy duty. No, I didn't mean it to be. Let's break it up by taking a break right now. Song of the day. I'll be back in a few moments, and we're going to continue right where we left off. Put a bookmark in it. Back with you in a few. Thank you. Chuck Muckian doing Caravans off of the album of the same name. How about that? This is an old album. I'd say about 25 years old. And one of my favorites is one of those Desert Island albums that I just can't get enough of. I'd want it on a desert island if I was stranded there. Great music, great artist. I'm going to have a link on today's show notes so you could listen to more of Ara Chakmakian. And I needed to play that one. I know it was a little bit long, you know, a little bit longer than our usual fare for the middle of our show. But I don't know, the tones, the melodies, just in one of those moods. I hope you enjoyed it. We are back talking about defining moments, talking about where we are, about history. Do we remember? When do we let go? And we're talking about eliminating. I think like psychiatry, psychology, where these are self-eliminating professions in the sense that you eliminate yourself from the person's life. I think religion too has to have some kind of boundaries. Like you can't go on forever searching. Maybe you can. But at some point, you need to be able to say, this is what I am committed to. Let me say it this way, rather than making a general statement. In my life, which I have the prerogative of saying that, okay? In my life, I think that it's important that I have that boundary. That at some point I say that, okay, I've gotten to a point where I know this and therefore that. I know that this is what I believe and therefore this is what my worldview is. And I'm comfortable with that. Yes, that doesn't mean that it's perfect by in all means, but it works for me and then you can start tweaking it. But it's based on something that has a foundation. And that foundation is what we get from religion. That's what I have gotten from religion. This lady who interviewed me about Lent, and she asked me, did you always observe Lent? Yes. It was kind of like a waking moment. Did you always observe Lent? Yes, I did. Did you always have a vegan diet? Yes, we did. I mean, it wasn't a big deal. I mean, don't forget that this whole idea about giving up meat, it's not like in America. These came about in the Middle East, where Armenian Christianity developed. In Armenia, you didn't have a day that started off with bacon and eggs, ham and eggs, and then a lunch menu that was a big cheeseburger, only to top it off with your dinner of a side of beef, of a big steak. I mean, this is kind of like an American tradition, all this meat. No, meat was kind of like a special thing. It was a special item. You would eat during the week and maybe over the weekend when grandma and grandpa would come over, maybe when the uncles and aunts would get over. They'd make a stew. They'd make something. And you would eat it. It wasn't thought about that this is a meat. And so now you're not going to have meat. And in fact, as we were kids, we were more encouraged to give up some of the other junks that we have. Give up ice cream. Give up candy. Because meat wasn't a big deal. It wasn't like the three meals a day of meat that we're accustomed to hear about here in the United States. And so as I was talking to this lady, to the author of this article and expressing that, it occurred to me that, like, hey, you know, we're just repeating a lot of this. And at what point do I eliminate myself from this discussion? Because there is so much more that we need to do with the knowledge that we have right now. Specifically, let me be specific with you. Lately, I have been very, very incensed with the way the radical right-wing theologians have kind of like plastered in some of their political beliefs with the theology of Christianity. Under the guise of calling it Judeo-Christian, they will tell you that, you know, this is what the Judeo-Christian value is. Hold on, hold on 1 minute. Wait, that's a very big stretch to go from your right-wing tendencies to say that these are Judeo-Christian values. And I was probably feeling more of that after last week, last Sunday, when we started reading last Sunday's Sunday's lesson was Expulsion Sunday. And we read in the churches from the Sermon on the Mount, Matthew chapter 5. You have heard that this is the way, but I tell you, Jesus says. You have heard, do not murder, but I tell you, if you have anger, you've murdered. You have heard, do not commit adultery, but I'm telling you that if you have lust in your heart, you have committed adultery. You have heard, an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. I'm telling you, love your enemies and pray for them that persecute you. Wild. That's not Judaism, folks. That's not. Jesus Christ was a radical. He came in with an idea that changes the discussion. And I think about this when we look at the condition of the world, where we are adding more and more to the weaponization of people to fight wars. There was an article today, just this morning, about who's really making out in the Ukraine-Russian war. The arms dealers, the people who are making the weapons, the people who are making the armory, the tanks, the aircrafts. Oh yeah, they're loving it. Big money, big money. And I start thinking about people like Dr. King. After he had done the civil rights movement, where did he go? Was the purpose of his civil rights movement was a self-elimination? Like we have to get civil rights to a point where we would eliminate the civil rights movement. In other words, everybody would be equal, right? So in a sense, the civil rights movement was destined to end. It didn't, because obviously there's still inequality and people argue it at different levels and everything. But basically the whole idea is let's get to a point where we can live in harmony. That was Dr. King's dream. I have a dream that one day we can sit together, right? But what did he do afterwards? 1967, I think it was. He became a true pacifist and I shouldn't even use that word. But that's what he did against the Vietnam War. He came out directly about the Vietnam War. And in fact, today, I'm going to put a link in today's show notes. Please look at it. I'm going to put a little writing that he did about why he came out against the Vietnam War. As a Christian. And it makes me think of we have taught the Lenten stories. We have taught the stories out of the Bible. And at some point, somebody needs to pick up where we left off. But now, what do we have to do? We have to be talking about peace, about the big goals. Peace on earth, goodwill towards men. That's what Jesus Christ came down for. The night of his birth, the angels proclaimed, peace on earth, goodwill towards one another. That's it. It's that simple. St. John the Evangelist says, you can't love God without loving your neighbor. Ignore all this stuff that you're doing for Lent if you can't love your neighbor. You can't say I'm doing Lent because I love God if I don't love my neighbor, if I'm not getting along with my neighbor, my brother, my sister, my father, my mother, my friends. I'm just qualifying neighbor because sometimes people say, oh yeah, the guy next door, yeah, I get along with him, so I'm okay. But by the way, I can't stand my brother. I don't get along with my mother, et cetera, et cetera. Self-elimination, self-eliminating jobs. I think I'm at that point right now where I realize that we need to go to the next step. The next step is really founded on that. This program that you're listening to, this podcast, started with that understanding that we need to take the next step. I mean, I can't be sitting around telling people that they have to give blood on April 24th as a way of saying to the world, hey, we're alive. I've said it for the last 40 years. Okay, now somebody else needs to pick that up. And I'm so glad that they are. Yeah, now we need to move to the next level. We need to start talking about peace. I heard this one man, this one commentator, ultra-right commentator, get up and he talked about the Judeo-Christian ethics. And he said that, this is what he said. In Judaism and Christianity, as the ultimate, these are the ultimate ways, Judeo-Christian. And mind you that he's Jewish, and so his only way of getting people to buy into Judaism is to put it into with Christianity. Do you know what that means? Well, think about it. You've got a Bible that has an Old Testament and a New Testament. Why in the world would you read an Old Testament? You'd read it because you understand that the New Testament is connected to it. So there's an interest there. There's an interest to connecting these two. And so he got up and he says that there's nowhere in Jewish or Christian theology that says that people are good. People are not good. They have to aspire to be good. I go, whoa, what do you mean there's nowhere? What are the words of Jesus? You are the salt of the earth. Yeah, Sermon on the Mount. He's talking to a multitude of people and he's saying, you are the salt of the earth. And if that's not enough, the next statement is, you are the light of the world. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but salt and right are good things. They're good things. But this man who's a commentator, and I'm so incensed by him because he has such a big following. He has that following because people blindly assume that he's on the radio. So therefore, he's written books, and therefore, he writes a column, and therefore, he must be somebody who knows. Let him talk about Judaism. I cannot argue. I cannot argue with him. Let him talk about it all he wants. I wouldn't even open my mouth. But the minute you throw in Christianity, hold it. Why is Christianity being defined in terms that are alien to us? And I realize that somebody needs to get up and start talking about these things without being accused of being anti-Semitic, without being accused of being on the other side. There is no other side. This is what my belief is. Armodoxy, Armenian Orthodoxy, for the last 2,000 years has shared, taught, and expounded on the words of Jesus Christ. And these are the words. And we talk about Jesus being a Jew. Many times people say Jesus is a Jew. That's fine. You want to say that, you're welcome to it. But it's not what Christians believe. Christians believe that Jesus is God incarnate. And we say that in our creed. God of God, true God of true God, begotten and not made, of the same substance as the Father. This is what we believe, okay? Now, you can't say God is God of the Jews alone, or God is a Jew. No, it doesn't work that way. And so it's interesting that within the Middle East cultures, that only the Jewish people, the only people that define their ethnicity via their mothers. Why? Well, if your mother's Jewish, then you're Jewish. Not from your father, but from your mother. Well, that plays into it, right? Because, obviously, Jesus' mother was Jewish. No question. Therefore, if you define it from the mother's bloodline, okay. But we don't. We talk about Jesus' father being begotten and not made, okay? Now, I don't care. You want to say, oh, that doesn't matter. We see the reality and everything. That's fine. This is what we believe. All I'm asking is that give us, as Christians, and especially Armenian Orthodox, the oldest tradition on earth, give us that freedom to express it the way we can, the way we should. And this doesn't mean that we have a hatred towards anybody, that we think we're better than anybody else, that we look down on anybody else. No, it doesn't. Just the opposite. We understand that we are one of many. We are children of God, and God belongs to the world, God of God. God is the creator. That's it. Every one of his children belong to him. That's why St. Paul says it so beautifully. There is neither Jew nor Greek. There is neither male nor female, slave nor free. We are all children of God. It's done. That's what comes to us from Christianity. And so in the self-elimination discussion that I'm started today, at what point do we say, okay, enough? We have said it now, and now we need to move on. And we need to really share it with the world beyond with the Sunday school that we run over here. So that's where I'm at today. It's kind of like the revelation that came out after this year. Remember at the beginning of the year, I said, I want us to claim that this year is going to be a year of mature faith, understanding ourselves within the context of our faith. And that maturity means that there's a time where you say, okay, I've got it. The foundation is good. I believe in this, and I want to live this. I'm not out there to argue with you. You're free to believe whatever you want. But give me that same freedom to believe in what I want to believe. It's not harming anyone. It's what I believe. And it's what was believed by my people for the last 2,000 years since Christianity. And the way I've explained it through Armodoxy, through the teachings of Armodoxy, it connects us to an existence that goes to back about 12,000 years on the Araradian Plateau. And the way I've explained it, what Jesus talks about, goes back to not 2,000 years ago in Bethlehem, but to 13 billion years ago to the creation of the universe. Yeah, it's all there. It's all there. It's all plain and simple. And I'm so thankful that we have this opportunity now through apostle.net to share this, because that's what we're doing every day. We're writing about this. And soon this becomes a volume. Soon this becomes our life that we can share with others. So that's where we're at right now. And I needed to share that with you because there are some ugly, ugly things that are going on in this world where people are dealing with intolerance, no acceptance. And mind you, you know, yeah, I get upset, but it's not about intolerance. It's like I am intolerant of intolerance. Does that make sense? Can you be tolerant of everything except intolerance of intolerance, people who are intolerant? And it makes sense to me because Jesus was accepting of everybody except one person. The person who said one thing and did another, which he labeled as the hypocrite. Do not be like the hypocrite. And he accepted everybody except the hypocrite. So yeah, there's an exception there. Did he love the hypocrite? Probably. I don't want to put words in his mouth. He loved the hypocrite, but he pointed him out for his actions. And in the same way, I'm not here to call you out on anything, to judge anybody. I'm just saying this works for me. And it has the caveat on there, of course, that, you know, nobody's being hurt by this. You can't believe in something that's going to hurt people, that's going to kill people, especially. You can't believe in war. You can't believe in violence. You can't believe in rape. Unacceptable by any standard. And so here we are. And there he is. The piano player, of course. And there's Susie. I'll be back in a few moments, okay?
Hi, this is Susie for In His Shoes Ministries. Before continuing with today's broadcast, I wanted to take this opportunity to remind you that this podcast is made possible through your prayers and generous donations. Epostle.net is the voice and expansion of In His Shoes Ministry. We are committed to bring apostolic evangelism to an electronic world. Your donations help us expand and deliver this message to a waiting world. Please support us by pressing on the donate button at either the InHisShoes.org website or epostle.net. Thanks for listening and God bless. We now return to this week's Next Step with Father Vazgen.
Hey, thank you, Susie, and thank you, all of you, for all of the love, the support, the nice notes that you send me. And most importantly, thank you for your prayers. We are at epostle.net, and I hope you've been following along in the Lenten journey. We're second week in Lent, and we have all kinds of things going on at Epostle, including a new program called Gidagi. It's Some of Sunday. It's just a short, short way of starting off your week. Yeah, Sunday evenings at 5 p.m., that's in our time zone, which is Pacific time zone, or easy way to remember, California time. And accordingly, wherever you're at, do the math, figure it out, and join us. And here's the nice thing. It's a YouTube Live, but also it gets archived. So join us right afterwards. It's a wonderful way to start off the week with a prayer, with a blessing, with a Bible passage. And anyway, well, I don't know how long we'll be doing this, but we're certainly giving it a shot. And I hope you're with us. We have Reclaim coming up on March 25th. Buy, steal, rob, do whatever you need to get to Los Angeles. It would be great to have you with us. It's an all-day event, March 25th. This year, Reclaim a Voice. And we also have Permission. I know a few weeks ago you heard Michael Gurdjian of Amerigazi fame, producer, actor, director, and world-renowned. I mean, this movie is just being shown all over. And all the critics, I mean, it's really exciting to read some of the reviews. They're very, very excited about this film. I loved it. And you heard that a few weeks ago when we did the interview with Michael Gurdjian. Anyway, we have now special permission to show it at Reclaim. You'll get a chance to view it before it comes out in the theaters. And that's going to be March 25th. You may want to get a ticket as quick as you can. They are available online. And we'll have a link on today's show notes. That's the easiest way. Go to the show notes and check out the link. Well, that does it for today. I hope you enjoyed today's show as much as we enjoyed producing it for you. On behalf of my producer, Susie, and myself, this is Father Vazgen. We look forward to seeing you at epostle.net. We'd love to hear from you at feedback@epostle.net. And we'll see you again next week when we will take the next step.
Stand by for disclaimer.
And now here's the fine print.
The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the next step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the next step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskullness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of vpostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.
vpostle.net, apostolic evangelism for an electronic and expanding.
Of Balan Top Visit.